You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. You know, it's tempting to imagine that life would be simpler and perhaps better if we could somehow travel back to a time free of the modern world's problems. The heroine of Andrew Sean Greer's latest novel, The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells, gets to live this fantasy, finding herself transported to versions of her life in 1918, 1941, and back to her present life in 1985. What does Greta learn from her amazing journey? The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells is published by Echo, and I'm pleased it brings Andrew back to our show today. Welcome. This is your third time on the Leonard Lopate Show?
My third time. My first time with you.
Okay. Well, you know, there's nothing like your first time. This is a fascinating book, and I was interested in reading in the publicity materials, as we call them, how you sort of stumbled on the idea of this book. Is this true that you were reading a description of a book in a bookstore?
This is how nuts writers are. I was reading this, a description of a forthcoming book. I think it was online. This was like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And my mind was worrying, thinking it sounded like a book that was the same story set in three time periods. And I thought, oh, that's such a great idea. I can't wait to buy that book. And then I realized not long afterwards that I had it totally wrong.
What was the book actually?
It's a great book. It's Michael Cunningham's Specimen Days, mm-hmm. which is something like that, but he does mm-hmm. something stylistic with it that's even better still. But it's nothing like what I had in my head, and I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll ask Michael's permission. But I get to write that book.
Right, because you misread a description of someone else's book.
Yeah.
That's a really good day when you misread something and get a whole idea for a book.
I guess so, yeah.
But you'd actually, this is a book that, it's kind of a time traveling book. It's a cool concept. This woman gets she's depressed, and she gets electroshock therapy, and then that kind of zaps her into these two different alternate realities for past 1918 and 1945. And this book is set in 1985, right?
Yeah.
So it's another cool way of sort of doing time travel, but it's all within a woman's consciousness.
And for me, it was a way to do time travel where she's never going to, like, go back and shoot her grandmother or something like that.
Because save Abraham Lincoln.
None of that's going to happen. You know, none of those, I escape those sort of paradoxes.
Right. It's all, it's very cool because it's just, and there's this sense that, well, if you really are experiencing something, even if you're just lying there and you're experiencing it, is it real? Is it really happening? I mean, if we're feeling that it's real. Is it real? Do you come down one way or the other on that?
I mean, I guess she talks about that in the book. She's like, is it, and her aunt who kind of says like, well, I don't know, to say something's all in your mind. I mean, what isn't all in your mind?
That's right.
So she says, it's like saying a sunset is all in your eyes.
Right.
Like, what's the point of explaining it that way?
Right. Well, now how did you choose these three periods? First of all, you set the present day is grounded in 1985.
Yeah, I did that because I wanted an extra time period at no extra cost.
Oh, okay,
just
smart.
To kind of start off not in the present, but another
smart.
Time.
But why 1985?
I wanted something I'd already picked 1918, mm-hmm. where there's a Spanish flu plague,
mm-hmm.
and I realized if I picked a sort of mirror time, 1985, I would have the AIDS plague, and
mm-hmm.
then both times would have this moment of, you know, and there's war in 1918, of course, kind of the boys disappearing
mm-hmm.
from the world.
Mm-hmm. And then 1945.
Well, I kind of, it's 41. It's right, right before the war.
I'm sorry. See, now I'm misreading your thing, and I'm going to write a book.
Maybe they say
I misread your thing.
Oh, no. See, exactly. Now you get that
book. I've got that 1945 book.
Darn it.
I'm sorry, 1941. So you have another wartime period.
Right. I mean, that's why I wanted something in the middle of the century, but also it reflects the war in 1918 so that she's able, for instance, to go to sleep with one war having ended, and then 2 weeks later another war begins, because for her it's all on the same plane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you started, I'm just curious about your process, because you had this notion about three different time periods because you misread that Michael Cunningham blurb.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
But you had that concept. So then what was your next step? Did you think about, well, who's the main character? Is that where you went next? Or what was your next? I'm curious to know how you assembled this book.
Well, first I did it all wrong. I was
as writers will do.
Yeah, I was like, I have a great idea. And I decided I was going to write three separate stories, one after the next, each in a different time period, I quickly realized that would be the most boring novel ever written, mm-hmm. and I abandoned it. Mm-hmm. But at one point, I realized, oh, if I could just have a character who would be waking up in a different story every day, they could all happen at the same time, and that would be way more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a fellowship at the New York Public Library in that big library with the lions.
Was it Coleman Center?
Coleman Center.
Yeah, that's lucky you. That's a good deal.
I will say luck might have been a lot of it, where I got full access to a lot of research, well, all the possible research I could imagine about New York and the Greenwich Village, and so I just enjoyed myself with that.
Well, some of our listeners may have, I think it's a pretty common fantasy to imagine what your life would be like if you'd let it in a different time, and my guest, Andrew Sean Greer, has written a new novel that's all about that fantasy. It's called The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells. I'm Andy Borowitz. I'm in for Leonard Lopate today at WNYC and WNYC.org. Now, there's always in these fantasies where people go back in time or even to another place like The Wizard of Oz, for example, there's always the kind of message is always, well, in The Wizard of Oz was specifically there's no place like home. But there's also a sense of, I feel like in your book, a sense of destiny, of personal destiny, that you can be in different time periods or you can imagine yourself in different time periods. And yet, character is destiny in a way. I mean, are you really, is your life going to really turn out that differently? What are your feelings about that? Do you feel, I mean, in your case, you know, you have your character Greta, but do you often wonder, you know, if you were born in a totally different era, would you be a very different kind of person, or would you just be you and you'd be churning butter?
Who you think I am, churning butter.
Well, I don't know. Writers now, novelists now are in more demand than they, well, actually not really now, but, you know.
I could have a line of milk products on the side.
Exactly. What about that notion? Because I feel it's one of the themes of the book is, you know, we have nostalgia. We have fantasies about different eras, but would things be that different for us if we were transported to a different era?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question I was trying to sort of pose to myself and trying to be honest with myself and think there are some people who are so indomitable that they would be the same in every time, for mm-hmm. better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Archie Bunker would be the same in every time probably, mm-hmm. but I would probably be, I'm such a weak person, I'd probably be pushed by the tides of the era more than I'd like to say, and would have voted for Nixon, you know. I'd like to think I'd go JFK, but you never know who you'd really be and who would be, what the influences would be around you. And so in the book, a lot of the characters change a lot in these different worlds. They're very different. And some of them are exactly the same, but things repeat, you know.
Right, and you ground the same, just to make it clear to our listeners, you ground the story by having the same characters in her life in these different eras as well, right?
Yeah, they're the same age, they're the same people, it's just in different costumes, in a different setting, in a different era. I mean, that was the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't time travel, but really, what does the time you live in make of you? And what can you, with its limitations and freedoms, actually, 1918 was a surprisingly liberated time,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Progress doesn't go in a straight line.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You think of feminism in the 70s, and a lot of people bemoan that, you know, we've lost some of that now, you know, and there are exciting things, there are things you could say on television, say you brought up Archie Bunker, there are things you could say on television in 1971 that you can't now say on television. So we don't always move in a straight line. That your book does a great job of showing that. I thought that was a unique approach to have the same characters moving from time period to time period. Because usually in any kind of I know this isn't strictly a time travel story, but in any kind of a time travel story, there's usually one person who is, bam, into this new place, and they're surrounded by completely unfamiliar people. And here, that's not the case.
Yeah, well, it's always hard to explain to people that it's not exactly time travel.
They have to read it.
They have to
buy it and then read it.
There's no way to explain it. It's a pretty cover with a clock on it. That was it sounded fun to me. That's mm-hmm. why I did it, because I was like, oh, I get to do the characters over and over. You know, it's sort of like an actor being able to play three roles in one play, only mm-hmm. it's the same role with different hair, in a way. So Greta is always the same consciousness. She's mm-hmm. her same self in different bodies, but the other characters I got to do, well, the way each of us has variations on our own personalities day to day or year to year, and we look back and we think, oh, I can't believe I did that. That wasn't, couldn't have been really been me. And do you own that that's the same person you have, or do you think I was drunk or something like that?
You know, when you changed your mind and said, I'm not going to write this as this kind of three-part story that's going to just progress in kind of a predictable chronological way, and you decide to mix things up and have her kind of flipping from place to place, were you ever concerned that one era, one Greta in one era was going to be more interesting than in another era? Because it seems to me that's a challenge in any kind of a story that flips around in time, is that, you know, you get to one section. I've read books like this where you get to one section, it's like, oh, no, now we're back in the French Revolution again. I didn't like that part.
Darn it.
Like, darn it. Can we get back to the Enlightenment or whatever, you know? Was that it? When you were rewriting the book, did you have to work on some, you know, was there an imbalance in the eras in terms of how interesting they were? Did you have to, like, correct that, or was that never a problem?
I feel if I say that, then people will be looking for it or something. Yes.
I'm digging. Yeah. I'm digging. There was.
Well, it just in the way that there's some characters that when you put them on, they just, the scene runs itself.
Right.
And other ones, you're like, okay, I have to walk this robot through the scene and make the reader believe in it. But that is the job, for the reader to believe it, whether you love it or not. I did love all the eras, but I certainly fell in love with one very much.
But you're not going to say what it is?
I can't say
you
which
can't
one.
Say? Oh, yeah. That's no fun.
Maybe if you get to the end, you might be able to figure it out.
Now, one other thing I have to bring up about this, which fascinates me, is that Greta in the book is a twin, and you are yourself an identical twin.
I'm an identical twin.
Right. So does that sort of inspire you to think about alternative selves of you? Like, what is your brother like? How is he the same and how is he different?
He's really similar to me.
Yeah,
in
that's
fact,
what I've
he
heard.
Lives about 10 feet away from me in an adjoining Victorian house in San Francisco. We share a backyard, and we go to each other's back door every day. So you can see two lives 10 feet apart, slight differences.
And what is he? What's his gig? What does he do?
He is a productive web designer. He's it's amazing. He's
so you two
smart.
Are occupying different eras of time. Then.
It's
he is
true.
In the present, and you're in the 19th century as a novelist.
He's in the 80s.
He's in the 80s.
That's how I feel about it. No, he's incredible, incredibly talented, and in demand in the city that wants that. And he's a dad with two sons.
And
he wears glasses, and I wear contacts. So there you go. Tell us apart that way.
What did it feel like growing up as a twin? Was it like cool or was it weird? I mean, it just seems like such a strange thing to me. I mean, we take it for granted because we see all these twins in strollers. But was it a good thing or was it weird? Both.
It was good and weird. I think only later I realized it was weird. I was great. I mean, you know, you grow up with like an ally and a best friend your whole life. We never fought, and at first, Felix was just Greta's brother in the book, and then I realized he had to be
twin,
a stronger bond, a twin, because
right.
the idea of losing a twin means suddenly being alone in the world in a way you've never been, and that is inconceivable sadness to me.
Well, I've been speaking with Andrew Sean Greer about his latest novel. It's called The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells. It's published by Echo. And Andrew will be reading and signing books tonight at 7:30 at Greenlight Bookstore. That's at 686 Fulton Street. Where else in Brooklyn? And he'll be reading and signing books tomorrow night at 7 at McNally Jackson Books. That's at 52 Prince Street. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Andy.
All right, good luck.